The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
This episode of Beyond is brought to you by forhims.com, forhims.com.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond, and welcome to IGN's Beyond, episode 553. My name is Jonathan Dornbush. I am your host for this week. This week, we are running down God of War's final Easter egg being confirmed. We also have Spider-Man PS4 going gold, and we're going to be getting some impressions of Overcooked 2 and Chasm, not Chasm, Chasm. But first, a reminder, Beyond has moved. It is now available every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific at beyond.ign.com. It will be available there for 24 hours before it is on all the other platforms you would expect Thursdays at 3 p.m. But be sure to go to beyond.ign.com on Wednesdays at 3 p.m. for the full episode. Now, onto the show. I'm thankfully joined this week by three lovely panelists. First, Tom, the Pie Man Marks.
Hello.
Old Speedruns Medina, Mark Medina.
That's me.
I just wanted to see how you reacted to that.
I didn't see that coming.
Yep. And our resident Monster Hunter expert, Casey DeFreitas.
Hello.
How are you guys doing?
Good.
I'm just okay.
I'm sorry, Mark.
Never mind.
Well, we're going to jump into some good news.
I was joking.
Oh, classic Mark.
Classic Mark.
We're going to jump right into some news that should make some hunters happy, maybe not Monster Hunter fans, but the hunt for God of War's final Easter egg is over. The games director, Corey Barlog, has been talking about this final Easter egg hidden within the game. Mm-hmm. Since the game pretty much came out, he actually referenced it on the IGN spoiler cast for God of War. But after a bit of digging, fans have finally found it. Spoiler warnings going forward for the end of God of War. If you have not finished the game's story, please don't listen to this segment, otherwise you will be hugely spoiled. Anyway, the final Easter egg is that in the corners of Kratos' house, which is very early on in the game, you can see it pretty much right at the start of the game, there are four little runes carved into the wood, and put together, they spell Loki, which is, of course, the name that Faye, Atreus' mother, wanted to give him before she died.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, one, what do you all think of this being the final Easter egg for the game? Sony Santa Monica confirmed that this was, like, the thing fans have been hunting down that Corey's been hinting at. How do you feel about that being, like, the final thing left in there?
Well, I think it's very interesting, and there are other clues pointing to that as well. Like, for example, there's, a weave that it looks like Faye was doing, and it was, like, you can see half of Loki's sigil, like, in actual Norse mythology. So if you were to have been really... you know, read up on Norse mythology and had seen that, you might have been able to predict it in the future. But so I'm confused, not confused, but I'm surprised that no one saw that in the very beginning and pointed that out until after we already knew that Atreus was Loki.
They do like a really good job of like not keeping you in your house. So
yeah.
I don't think people, you know, tend to look around. I think it's cool because there was another secret, kind of like this in Dark Souls, and it was we all familiar.
Dark Souls.
no spoilers. One of the gifts you choose at the beginning is a pendant, and the pendant seemed to have no in-game use at all. And the creator was like, "If you don't choose the pendant, you shouldn't choose anything at all. It's the best thing, right?" And so people are just trying to figure out what this was, and then he eventually came clean on an interview on IGN that it was just like a bit of fun. that there's actually nothing there. But it's like, it kind of like, you're just like, oh. Because people found a use for the pendant, and it's to get something not that great. And it was like, well, this wasn't really like worth the hunt. And he's like, oh, because that's not it. And then eventually it was just like, oh, there's nothing. I was just having like a bit of fun. And so
oh,
it's like,
man.
It's nice that Corey was like, hey, guys, there's a secret out there, and that people were able to find it, and that they were able to be comfortable with saying, yes, that's it, you found it, and they're not going to just like carry it on a stick forever.
Yeah.
And keep the like Reddit community searching for something that's not there.
I wanted the carrot. I wanted the carrot on the stick. Like, to be
really?
Like, yeah. Like, I think this is a really cool Easter egg. I think it's one of those awesome ones that you're not going to like really put together until afterwards, which is nice, because even if you found all these runes and you tried to put them together, you'd be like, oh, it spells this, and then maybe you're just like, oh, Loki's such a trickster, ha ha ha, and you move on, and you
even
if you think about it early on, like, it's not super a spoiler until you actually know what's going on. I really like secrets like that, but I was just a little bit disappointed that they kept calling this the final thing, and that was the conversation about it. Not disappointed in what it was, just in that it makes it feel like you shouldn't go looking for more, right? Like, it's almost like they're saying, like, it's done, just move on,
right,
go to other games now, and
there's nothing more here to see.
Yeah, yeah.
They did find so much.
Oh yeah, I'm not complaining that there's not enough in that game. Far from it. That game is humongous, but I was just a little bummed by the wording of it all, but
sure. Mm-hmm.
That didn't make the thing a bummer or anything like that.
Tom hates God of War. You've heard it here first.
It's true. That's what I said.
Well, so somewhat along those lines, a huge shout out to the subreddit God of War Secrets, because they were the ones sort of compiling everything, putting all of the clues together, piecing every little bit of not just this secret, but so much more else in the game. And there has been some split opinion in that subreddit of like, oh, well, this was it. We thought it was so much more, and there's been some references to interviews Corey gave that were possibly mistranslated, or people misunderstood something he said, or obviously
I think people want something.
Yeah.
I think they want to, like, hey, we figured this out, and now Kratos has a shotgun. it's like what you discovered is just stuff on a wall. Mm-hmm. I think they want some sort of in-game thing. Mm-hmm. But the thing is like, I don't know, data miners would have found that stuff already. And so it's like, it's pretty obvious it wasn't going to be something like that.
But also God of War had that, right? Like the map, the clue that was only on the cloth map.
Yeah.
If you look at a bunch of different things, then you get this crazy thing, like, and a rift opens up. Like, those secrets were in the game. Mm-hmm. It's just we'd already found them.
Yeah.
And I think you're right that people wanted more than that. But Corey saying, oh yeah, there's something you guys haven't found, doesn't necessarily equate to you are owed some other in-game item, right?
Sure.
Like, I think it's less like this is the best secret in the game, and this was more just like, hey, we have this list of secrets, and you guys didn't find one yet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. you know.
And what's really cool about it is, obviously, we were saying there are a lot more secrets in this game that players have already found, and just the amount of layers to this world and what was built into it, because it was something I talked about in my review of how intentional so much of this game felt in the gameplay and the storytelling and everything. And so cool to see that that's true of the world that they built too, that they've layered so much. Corey has talked about it a lot, of how Faye knew everything that was going to happen, that Faye predicted this journey they would have. And so to have just even a thing at the very beginning of the game that you would miss, you would normally miss that when you're playing, but just to have it there at the very start, like, she knew everything that was going to happen.
It
further drives that point.
Yes,
she knows it all.
Yeah, I very much want a walking simulator prequel game where it's just you doing Faye preparing all of the things that are going to happen for them in the game.
That could
be
cool.
Yeah, like her setting up traps so the mountain falls in a certain way, and her being like, that twig should be 2 inches to the left in that order. But so there is some discussion with God of War fans about how there may be other secrets to find. There are these red box runes that haven't properly been figured out. There's sort of a mix of Norse mythological runes, but also some, I believe, like other set of magical symbols, staves that people have found that sort of relate to each other. So if this is the final actual secret that they planted in the game, are you guys seem to be okay with that, or would you like to see more? Especially since they're introducing New Game Plus to the game, they have the opportunity to sort of seed some stuff in. Would you want them to, or do you feel like leave the game as they intended originally?
Oh, I'm totally into devs sneaking more secrets into updates that aren't like that or aren't supposed to be about that. I love when they do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll stick to just like whether he does or not, I'm glad that they were okay with confirming that everything's been found.
Mm.
Yeah, it's kind of a, I don't know, I guess you can kind of say like ballsy thing to kind of just like, end cap their game by being like, you guys did it. You found everything. And it's like most devs probably wouldn't want to admit that. So I'm just glad whether they add more stuff is like irrelevant because it's just going to be, you know, it's just gonna be news stories to me because I'm not going to go back and look for anything.
Yeah, it was really nice that they aren't sending everyone on wild goose chases. Like I know with Shadow of the Colossus, people tried to find secrets in that game forever.
Well, the extra Colossus that people theoretically thought would be there. And wasn't.
They, it was crazy. And I'm glad that no one will be wasting their time looking for something that isn't there.
What was it, the Kiliad mystery? Is that what it's called? Maybe I'm saying that wrong. The GTA 5 thing with the aliens, where
UFO.
Yeah, they found UFO symbols everywhere, and they found this whole mural. People were looking for those secrets for years.
Another Grand Theft Auto would be the Sasquatch
the Bigfoot,
San Andreas, and it's like nobody ever found it.
I really want to know if any of you guys watching or listening have looked for an Easter egg for years, only to find out after hours and hours and hours of looking that there definitely was nothing there. Are you upset about it, or are you just satisfied that you tried? Yeah. Do you appreciate the journey, or are you pissed that you wasted your time?
Yeah.
Also, if you haven't watched, it's now defunct game trailers. Pop Fiction is like literally a show dedicated to this, and it's really, really good.
Good to know.
Really good stuff.
I love when stuff is hidden in these games. I agree that I'm glad that we know this was the end and that players can sort of like rest easy with that. I assume there will be things hidden in the next game we're going to talk about because it's recreating New York and there's a lot of space there. Spider-Man for PS4 has gone gold. The game is done. Of course, they'll probably be trying to squash some bugs in the next few weeks. Like the game is, squash some virtual bugs. How are you guys excited? I haven't really talked to all of you about Spider-Man. I want to get your thoughts on it. And also the concept of going gold in this age where things can be patched so easily. What do you think of?
Yep. I'm very excited for Spider-Man. I'm excited. Going gold again. Yeah. Doesn't really mean much. It basically just means that, going gold does mean something because there are people out there that play their PlayStation that don't have an internet connection. So going gold does have to mean that the game is theoretically complete. It's very exciting because it just kind of guarantees there's not going to be any more like delays. Not that the game was ever delayed. And I know it's coming out soon. I'm very excited for it. I know it's like a team thing too. I remember when No Man's Sky went gold and they took that big picture with the disc. And so I know it's like a morale boost to see, even though it's like burned or whatever, but to see your game like physically on a disc is got to make them feel good, especially since like Insomniac, like they seem like they've worked really hard on this game. I wouldn't say a lot. I don't know if anything's like riding on it in the sense of like people love Insomniac, but I think it's gonna be good. I'm very excited for it.
I played quite a bit of Spider-Man 2, and that was a ton of fun, so I'm really excited to come back and re-experience it. I haven't played it at all. I didn't even play it at E3.
Okay. I have not played it either.
But I did hear it was pretty challenging, which makes me more excited for it. It's just cool. I'm glad that it's done, and it's going to come out on time, because I'm sure a lot of people would be very upset.
The challenge is an interesting part to bring up, too, just because I feel like there's that balance with Spider-Man specifically as a movement mechanic of you need to feel in control. You need to feel like you can do everything that he can do. But also if you make that too on rails, then it's not fun. So I agree. There's that flow that you have to hit right in the middle there.
Which I'm excited to get my hands on it.
Right.
I want to see what that's like.
I'm really excited for it. This was one of the games that, when I bought a PS4 Pro, basically it was mostly for God of War, and then this, and going back to a few other things. And I'm just looking forward to it, man. It reminds me of a lot, and I know I'm not the first person by far to make this comparison, but it reminds me a lot of the Arkham games early on. Like the first Arkham game, when you played that game, you felt like Batman. Like, you just did. You got in there and you were fighting multiple dudes at once and you were jumping up on the gargoyles and you were doing all that stuff. And even if this game plays completely differently, it still has that same sort of vibe where I don't think I've played anything that made me feel like Spider-Man quite as much, right? And obviously that doesn't have any bearing on if the game's any good or if it's bad or or how widespread it is or any of that stuff. It's just, it feels so, so like Spider-Man. It almost reminded me, too, of when we, at E3, when we played Anthem. And it was just an Iron Man simulator. And I was like, why is this game not an Iron Man licensed game? And it would, it just feels so Spider-Man-y and so, so cool that way.
Wait, so you've played it?
I played it at E3.
Yeah, see, and that's the thing is, like, there are so many things. I remember when it's like you just want to get your hands on something. Like, I kind of teared up the first time I played Horizon Zero Dawn because I'd been following that game so long. So to actually, like, I'm like, I want to see what it's like to move Aloy around. And so when I did for the first time here at IGN, I was just like, man, this is awesome. It feels exactly how I thought it was going to feel. The same thing happened with, like, I wasn't really a big fan of, like, the DualShock 3. And so when they showed the DualShock 4, I was at work at another job, and one of my coworkers was like, hey, they have a PS4 at GameStop or whatever, you know, before it came out. And I was like, I'll be right back. And I left the job. I didn't even play any games because all they have was like Knack or whatever. I didn't even play anything.
Knack shade.
Wow.
Sorry. All I did was just hold the controller, and I was like, okay.
And you never went to work at that other job again.
And then I was like, I'm going to go work at IGN so I can cover PS4. No, that wasn't for years. But, you know, it was just one of those things where it's like, if Spider-Man were here right now and they were like, Mark, you can play it for 5 minutes, I'd be like, good, because I just want to see what it feels like.
Right.
And then that's fine. And then I'll wait. Because that's what hurts the most is the not knowing.
It's okay, Mark.
It's okay.
Well, you'll get through these next few weeks. It's very close. It's only September 7th.
Very close.
So, yeah, what's nice is I played it. I got the chance at E3 to play it. And I had that same reaction of, I don't care what, I don't want to see anything else with the game. I just want to know if it felt right when I played it.
Yeah.
And, like, having that satisfaction, there was a challenge. Like, for the first, I played the demo 3 times. And for the first time, I was running into walls and accidentally, like, losing my grip on things. And so I was a bad Spider-Man at first.
Oh, no.
I was not good despite him being several years.
You're just
the
new Spider-Man.
Exactly. I was just getting my footing down. Mm-hmm. But there is something exciting about that, and to know that it is at the point where it is ready to be shipped and ready to be mass-produced on discs, and we are so close to this game, and I desperately want more of it. I'm sure we'll get a bit more of it in the next few weeks.
Yeah.
But I'm very excited about that one.
We interrupt this program to bring you a brief message from Hims, a new wellness brand for men. Here's a not-so-fun fact. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35, and by the time you start to notice hair loss, it's usually too late. It's generally easier to keep the hair that you have than to replace the hair that you've lost, so why not do something about it? 4hims.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, sexual wellness, and other stuff like that that might be embarrassing to deal with in person. Luckily with Hims, there's no waiting room, no awkward doctor's visits, and you can save plenty of time by just going to a website. Hims connects you with real doctors and gives you medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss and other possibly embarrassing problems. And this isn't snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements either. These are well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. If this sounds like it would help you out, order now. Our listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See the website for full details, but this would cost hundreds of dollars if you went to the doctor or to a pharmacy. So just go to forhims.com/beyond. That's forhims.com/beyond. Once again, that's forhims.com/beyond. Thanks for listening, and now back to the show.
Something a little further off in the future is some more DLC for Ni No Kuni 2.
Woo. So not totally far off, because the free update is coming out on August 9th.
Yes, the first free update.
Close.
And then there is a big story expansion coming in early 2019, along with a couple other free DLC packs in between.
Mm-hmm.
DLC pack number 1, I believe it's vaguely referenced.
In an adventure pack.
Yes.
Coming out on August 9th.
Yes. Do you have all the full details, Casey?
I
do. I got them right here.
Mark got it. Mark got this. Yeah.
No.
So, in Ni No Kuni 2, there are these things called Dreamer's Doors, which is part of a side quest. And these are your procedurally generated dungeons that go deeper and deeper floor by floor. And they can be pretty difficult. And it's also where you get your exclusive materials and, like, end game stuff. So to the very last of these Dreamer's Doors dungeon, the Faraway Forest, they're adding 2 more floors where you can unlock new costumes for your characters. And they're also adding 2 new bosses. And I can't remember what they're called, but it's Blackheart and Zara or Xena. I can't remember her name, but she looks like a seraph.
Xena?
Xena, yeah. Warrior
the
Princess.
Warrior Princess?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Blackheart is a dragon. So they look pretty cool. That seems, right. I think
Xena,
that's
a Warrior Princess and a dragon.
Yeah. Faraway Forest Cave, two new floors. And I know that that dungeon also has a level 95 boss. Well, so more endgame content.
Yes. Yeah. It seems like everything coming out is very much for people who have beaten the game.
Yeah.
To give them an excuse to return.
Yeah. The big update in early 2019 is going to be more story content. And I'm not total. And there's a new dungeon with the second pack coming out in the winter. So
it's a lot.
Quite a bit.
I was a really big Ni No Kuni fan this year. It was on PC and PS4, but I played on PS4, and I did not expect to get as sucked into it as I did, especially with the kingdom building mechanic. Mm-hmm. That really hooked me. So I hope they maybe let you expand that in one of these. But I love that game a lot. I had a really good time with it. Tom, I know you played it a bit. Casey, yeah. You played it a bit. Mm-hmm. Mark, it's your favorite game of all time, of
course.
Here
we go. Ni No Kuni.
Love that cat boy.
No, I always wanted to play it. And I missed it on PS3, and I was hoping for a PS4 re-release, and they just never did. I like RPGs, and I don't know. Like, do you have to play the first one to play?
No,
understand?
Nope. Stories are totally different. Yeah,
yeah.
Combat's totally different too. Yeah. It's
well, the first one game. You do like creatures and stuff. Or what?
First one's kind of like Pokemon. Yeah.
But then the second, but this one like you actually.
No, I'm still sorely disappointed that the second one got rid of that mechanic entirely. So.
Oh, really? The capturing?
Yeah, it's just not there at all. And I mean, they have Higgledies, which is
the Higgledies.
Yeah, yeah. You couldn't hear that. Barrett Courtney, our producer's dulcet tones, yelled out for the Higgledies. Yeah. As he has said on the show, Higgledies are lit.
They are.
Especially the fire ones.
Yeah, the fire ones are literally lit.
They're really cute, and I like them, but there's nothing. They're very different from going out and capturing monsters and training them up. Like griffins
and
dragons.
They're
better. They're more akin to Pikmin than they are. Yes. Yeah. But so you both played it a bit. I don't know where you ended up with the game, how far you got into it, both of you, but are you excited for the DLC? Will you return to the game?
I didn't beat it. Okay. I lost a little bit of steam with it, but I did get pretty far in. I'm just more happy that, like, I don't know if I'm going to go back for this DLC necessarily, but I'm really happy that it's getting it. Mm. I'm just really impressed with the support this game's getting. It's not the type of game, for one reason or another, that I would have expected to get this level of post-launch support.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're doing a really, like, the PC port, I know this is beyond, but the PC port was really good. They supported that with bug fixes. They're doing these DLC packs. Like, it's really... It's really impressive. It's really admirable, and I like that a lot because they have a lot of systems like the Kingdom Builder and these randomized dungeons that facilitate adding just new content, and it's nice that they're taking advantage of that rather than just saying, whatever.
Yeah.
And hopefully that means it sold well.
Yeah.
To be totally honest, I stopped playing about 15 hours in because the code I got in pre-release was on the PC, and I really, really prefer playing on the PS4, and also the cloud saves don't work on
my copy.
You're
on the right show, Casey.
Yeah.
That's what I like to hear.
No, so like I stopped playing because I have it. It's stuck on a PC, so I do intend to start a new game eventually on PS4. Maybe
that,
during
that happens
our winter
a lot,
break.
Like at this job, it's like, well, what happened with Final Fantasy 15 is it was like a debug copy, and it's like you put like 40 hours into it, and then the game comes out, and you're like, I'm not covering any of this DLC because I would have to start from the beginning.
Yep, yep.
Sorry, it's not happening.
It's a rough life we lead.
I know. Getting games early.
No, since this copy of Ni No Kuni doesn't work with the Steam cloud saves, I can't even like take. I would have to take a computer. Back and I don't want to deal with it. TLDR, do not want to deal.
It's fair. Well, I hope you do jump back into it. And I hope if you're listening and you maybe played Ni No Kuni or dropped off, you do jump back in. I was really surprised. I think it's a very, very good game. It definitely has its faults, but is very fun. If you are not of the single player persuasion, however, and you long for the days where you can be dropped into a map with 99 of your best friends or strangers, good news. Realm Royale is getting a closed beta. I believe it's launching this week, if you're listening to the show when it went
really?
Live. Yes.
This week?
Yeah.
Man, I actually immediately went and signed up for it when you sent this, but it didn't say when it was coming out anywhere on the website.
So I think they're rolling. They announced it on the 24th on the PlayStation blog and said it was coming the next week, which would be this week. Cool. So that'll be coming. In addition to that, H1Z1 is launching in full on August 7th and bringing with it, it's been available sort of in its beta early access form. It'll have new weapons, new vehicles, a battle pass available for people. My question in general is, one, if you're playing Battle Royale games, will you jump into either of these now on PS4? And two, do you see there being a viable space for so many Battle Royale games on a platform that, of course, it's been a lot in contention right now of not wanting to go cross-play with other consoles? It will go cross-play with PC with certain games, but how do you feel about that?
The only thing I love more than Ni No Kuni 2 is Battle Royale games.
Yeah, all the Mark.
All right, Mark. I'm excited that H1Z1 is leaving early access or whatever it's called. Open beta, was that what it was on PS4?
It's H0Z0.
Yeah.
It's not. Please don't.
That's kind of cool.
That would actually be great.
I kind of like that name.
So I'm really glad it's leaving. I'm really glad that Realm Royale is coming there because this PS4 has its crossplay issues, which I've written on the site about how much they frustrate me. But it is exciting that more battle royales are coming there because it got the Culling 2, which flamed out of existence in a week.
Yeah.
And then H1Z1 and what was the other one? There's one more that I'm forgetting completely and I can't remember right now. Anyway.
Radical Heights?
No, that was on PC only.
Never made it.
Yeah. But anyway, PUBG, the main thing is PUBG has Fortnite, duh, that's the other one. Fortnite and H1Z1 are the only battle royale options on PS4 because PUBG didn't make it there yet. I mean, I'm sure it will. But now that Realm Royale is coming in, I'm glad that there's more options. I'm also really glad that Realm Royale, I think what impressed me most about it when it came out in early access on PC is that it's really different. Mm-hmm. It's not just a Fortnite clone. It's not just a PUBG clone. It is really doing its own thing. You have mounts that anytime you can press a button and you just get on a horse and ride away, and you have infinite horses that you can summon at any time. It's very silly.
Customize your horses?
There are cosmetics for your horses, although those cost money because that's the way these games work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The
horse armor.
The other thing is that you choose a class. You choose one of five classes, and they all have their own abilities. And then also they have their own abilities and a special weapon and armor that they can find on the field. So you actually are building the class as you go. So if you want, the engineer has a shield. Or you can also choose different weapons or different abilities that you find, like looting, like normal PUBG looting. So it's very, very weird and different and brings in these RPG elements and is very colorful and creative. And obviously, Casey, you can speak to this a little more, but Hi-Rez behind it, Hi-Rez, I feel like Hi-Rez gets a little bit of the short end of the stick sometimes because when Paladins came out, everyone was like, oh, it's just an Overwatch clone. And when Smite came out, people were like, oh, it's just 2D or 3D League of Legends and all that, they constantly get that comparison, and sure. I feel like they got it again with Realm Royale.
Yeah.
And then when it came out, people were like, whoa, wait, this is actually something, and this is actually different, and it's really good. So I was happy to see it break past that barrier of comparison.
I'm definitely looking forward to it. I mean, I played a ton of Fortnite, and I'm not playing it so much anymore, but a fantasy-themed Battle Royale is super up my alley. I know it's going to be incredibly up all of my friends' alleys that I usually play games like this with. So I know as soon as it comes out, they're going to be playing it, and I'm going to have a bunch of people to play with. And I'm a fan of Hi-Rez. I really like Smite on the PS4. I haven't played much of Paladins, but I know that they support both games a lot. There's always so much new content coming out with this game, and with that level of service on those games, I trust that they will provide the same level of service for Realm Royale. And I'm excited to play it. I'm really interested. You can play warrior, assassin, mage, engineer, or hunter.
Mm-hmm.
That just sounds really cool.
Are you going to do hunter?
Yeah.
Just to keep in.
I'm a sneaky archer. I'm going to do that.
I think it's the hunter that gets there's one of them that gets a sniper rifle. It's either the assassin or the hunter.
Oh, yeah. There is also an assassin. So.
Yeah. Because the way the game works, too, is everything that you loot that you don't need, you turn into shards. And then you can go to forges around the map and turn those shards, craft them into things. But when you're crafting, a big light and noise pops up so everyone knows you're doing it and they can come attack you while you're waiting for this item to finish.
I risk, high reward.
Yeah.
So it sounds cool. Like there's more to do in this battle royale other than just look for people. Like,
yeah.
Like, I know in PUBG you're like, you know, looking at houses and stuff like that. And the same with Fortnite is you're swinging an axe and
it's a little
more
active.
Doing some trees. Yeah. But like this one, it seems like you're
doing some trees. Yeah.
You know,
that classic Fortnite action.
Chopping the trees and stuff. But this one, it seems like you're like, yeah. But I mean, that also kind of sounds like it's borrowing stuff. Well, probably not borrowing because it probably came out first. But I don't know when this game came out. I almost knocked over your drink.
It's fine.
But what was the game? The one I just talked about, Radical Heights. Like, yeah. There was stuff in that game too, where it was like, hey, you can like play this game or whatever, but it would be loud and stuff like that. But it was like maybe you could get a cool weapon and stuff like that. So
yeah, it was interesting to see some of the similarities of that. It's weirdly tragic to me how much Radical Heights crashed and burned,
right?
Because
it actually had some stuff that was a little different.
Yeah, it had ideas that were different that we're now seeing crop up in other games, and I don't necessarily think that Realm Royale just ripped that idea from them.
Sure.
I'm not saying that at all.
Right.
I just mean that it's doing things that were successful there, and it's cool to see those mechanics live on in a game that I think has a fair bit more support. I know it reached over 100,000 concurrent players on Steam the week it came out. I was actually talking to one of the producers from Hi-Rez at E3 about their success, and he was saying they had no idea it was going to be that successful, and they bought literally every server they could use in their server like architecture place, and then to the point where they were paying the people to physically build more servers real time, and every time they built one, plugged it in, and turned it on, it would be full in minutes. And then they had to do it again and do it again. So the game had a lot of popularity. We did an early access review on IGN for it, and I think that it will translate well. Obviously, Hi-Rez knows how to make a game with a controller. They know how to do console games really, really well. I think that popularity is going to translate over.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what happens. I think it's cool that in the space that obviously is very fresh and newer compared to other genres, that we are getting competition that is different and not everyone is just doing exactly what Fortnite did or exactly what PUBG did, and especially with Call of Duty and Battlefield coming later this year.
Is that free too? Realm Royale.
I don't know about I don't know what it will be at launch for PS4, but it is a free to play game.
Yeah.
If they're doing some sort of like Founders Pack thing like Paladins did on Switch, I don't know about that, but I know that it inevitably will be completely free.
My guess would be to solely compete as a like Battle Royale game.
Yeah.
You kind of need to start
also,
with
also like
price.
All of Hi-Rez's games are free to play with Founders Packs. And
well, it's just cool to be able to like someone goes and buys a PS4 for the first time and it's like, the amount of games you get just for buying a console nowadays is crazy.
Well, and it's great, especially too, if a small note programming wise, especially with PS Plus or Games with Gold, things like that. We are recording before the PlayStation Plus games for August have been announced. So if you're wondering why we're not talking about those, that's because we don't know what they are.
We'll just have to predict.
How have they not been announced?
Hopefully
yet?
They're good. They're holding because it won't be till the next Tuesday. So yeah, unfortunately we can't talk about those, but we'll talk about them next week. I do want to touch on one game that is currently out now, correct? Chasm?
Yes, came out today. Today for us recording.
As well as Overcooked 2, which is coming in, I believe, August 7th.
Yep.
So that's a little bit further in the future. But Tom, you reviewed Chasm.
I did.
What'd you give it? And tell us what you thought.
Gave it a 7.
It's good.
It's good.
Good.
It is so weirdly anticlimactic to be waiting for a game for 5 to 6 years and then give it a 7.
Yeah.
that's like a very strange thing to me, because it's not a bad game by any means, and it's not a great game by any means, in my opinion. But it's just kind of fine. Like it's a good game. It had a lot of problems that I actually had to kind of pull myself back from because I was just enjoying it at the end of the day. It's hard to. This is my third Metroidvania, 2D platforming Metroidvania review in a row.
Yeah.
My last one was Hollow Knight, and the one before that was Yoku's Island Express. So I guess this is my beat now.
The setup with this one is that the map would change every time you play if you're starting a new game. But it is a Metroidvania that has those roguelike, randomly procedurally generated map.
But it's not a roguelike.
Yes,
that's a huge thing. Is the map is procedurally generated, pieced together with these sort of puzzle piece rooms.
When does it rebuild itself?
Like never. So never. It only rebuilds itself. Like, it builds itself
on a new
at
game.
The beginning of a new game.
And so it's then, like Diablo 2. Like Diablo 2, you don't die. Like it's a different game every single time, but dying right. doesn't change anything.
Exactly.
So it's not like, yeah, Spelunky. Or,
yeah, and
or,
it took me 8 hours to beat. And the dev said it would take like 10 to 15 to find all of the secrets and everything, which I believe. It only took me 8 hours
especially to since you can't follow a guide.
Right. Well, so there's some things that are similar. Like you're always going to get the wall cling item first, right? And then you're always going to get the slide item after that. Right? There are things that will be set. You're going to fight certain bosses in a certain order. You're going to go to different certain areas in a certain order, all that stuff. But how you get there, the paths that you get there are randomized.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's like the big hook of this game is that it's a Metroidvania that everybody's experience will be different. Anytime you play it again, it's going to be different. You're not going to be able to just run through it the same way. I think this really was a bad idea. I think it severely hurt my interest in the game.
Why so?
Because the worlds that it builds are really, really impressive for being built by a formula. Very impressive for being built by a formula.
Mm-hmm.
But completely uninteresting and devoid of personality compared to any other Metroidvania.
No.
They are a series of very generic looking hallways. Let me be very clear. The art in this game is amazing. It's beautifully animated. It's beautifully designed. It's a great looking game. But the hallways are super, super simple. The enemies that you fight are beautifully animated and varied and fun to fight, but they're very repetitive. You encounter the same room layouts constantly.
Mm-hmm.
You encounter the same sort of pathing constantly. The fact that it had to fit together in this procedural Lego-like way means that there was no way it could be interesting to look at, pretty much, in my opinion, or from my experience. And even when I started a new game, yeah, all the paths were randomized, but they were just the same hallways I had been running through in a different order, so it wasn't really any different to me. It didn't feel like a whole new map. It just felt like a different layout of the same boring map.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was so hard coming off of Hollow Knight, which has one of the most beautiful, detailed, engaging, amazing, living worlds I've ever seen in a Metroidvania, where different biomes connect to each other in ways that make sense, where, like I mentioned this in my review, but like a lake will be above a city and then that city will be raining, right? And there's weird things like that in its subterranean world. And you compare it to this where it's just like...
Is that game randomized or no?
No. That's wonderfully handcrafted.
Yeah,
and compared to Chasm where you're just walking through some mines and then you go through a door and you're in a forest area for some reason, but the forest area has its own mini-map, so how it connects to the mines does not matter. These things are like each biome in the game is unique and beautiful and engaging and fun to be in, but also completely separate from each other and completely devoid of any sort of like interesting layout. And it's so disappointing because I loved what they're trying to do. And I think that probably speedrunners will get a kick out of it because it's consistent enough that you can kind of know what to expect, but also random, which speedrunners love that balance. But I'm not a speedrunner, and it didn't really matter to me how the map was made. It was just a boring map.
Yeah.
And this, again, this was my biggest complaint with the game. It's not a bad game.
Sure.
It's a fun game. It's just, it just wasn't anything overly compelling or overly interesting, anything I wanted to come back to actually see what that procedural generation mattered for.
Yeah, the randomization of that feels like, it sounds like a back-of-the-box like bullet point, but it ends up hampering this, especially.
Well,
yeah.
I kind of take issue with this whole, like, everything, not that everything's becoming procedurally generated, but like, you know, like you guys all play No Man's Sky and another procedural game that got a 7. And it's just kind of like, it's one of those things where it's like, when you go into a cave, you're like, am I going to find anything of actual interest here? And the answer is probably not, because nobody put that there. Nobody put that cave there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's there because a dice got rolled and the game decided, yes, that should be there. And there's something weird about it. It's like, it'd be like if you took, like, I'm a huge Inside fan. And if you, the best thing about Inside is that everything in that game is where it's supposed to be because that's where they put it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, it's just great. And it, like, imagine if Inside was procedural. Like, how much that would take away. If it was still spooky, if it was still, like, had, like, the zombies and stuff like that.
But it wouldn't have told a compelling story
Right. Because, like, nobody built it. And that's my thing with Chasm. Mm-hmm. Like something like Celeste. Like they built that world. Chasm, you know, matter of speaking, like, they did not build that world. They built textures and an algorithm that puts the world together. And it kind of is a little off-putting. It's supposed to be for replayability, but instead it makes me just not want to play it at
prevents,
all.
It prevents them from being able to tell any story through the gameplay. Mm-hmm. Like, you are only getting
or
story.
Through the environment.
Yeah, and, you don't learn anything because it's, I mean, they can't tell them to put things there.
Yeah.
So what I will say is I don't have anything against procedural generation. Yeah.
It can work really well for some games.
There are games like Rogue Legacy, I think, does it really well. Dead Cells does it really, really well. And
but those are both roguelikes, so you want to die
exactly.
and experience a different kind of world.
The rebuilding of the map is part of the game of you're constantly going through it. The problem I had with the procedural generation in this case was that you couldn't really tell. It had no impact on your experience of this 10-hour game, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. How the map was made means nothing to you while you're playing it.
Yeah.
And it means something to you. I mean, even in a game like Binding of Isaac, where it reloads or does a new map every time you play it. Even in that game, how it was generated doesn't really matter on any given run.
Because, again, it's a roguelike.
Right, unless you're min-maxing the game and you're trying to speedrun it, like, that's when that starts mattering. How it was actually created doesn't really matter to you, but because you're experiencing the revamp of the map so frequently, any of that repetition is sort of just part of the game as you learn this repetition. You don't have time to learn the repetition. It just feels repetitive in Chasm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something to... I mean, the namesakes of this subgenre of Metroid and Castlevania, like, there isn't a specific design to those maps and an intention to layer you from one area to the next.
Right.
And that makes those maps so evocative, and you remember going in a certain direction to get a secret hidden item or to go fight a boss or something like that. That stuff matters in those games, but it feels like because the world will be randomized for each person, remembering, like, oh, this path to that boss isn't really as much of a selling point or, like, of interest.
Well, and even more than that, randomization also does a really good job of creating stories to tell your friends, right? You can have moments in No Man's Sky where you're like, man, I landed on this planet and had this crazy tree and then this insane dog monster came out. You can have those moments, or you can have those moments in Binding of Isaac where you say, dude, I got this insane item right away in the first chest room, and then that let me get this other item later that did this, and you have those story moments. But the randomization in this game is just how the levels are laid out.
Right.
It just makes the levels not interesting.
Oh, I went left instead of right.
Right. And that
what?
That difference means nothing and isn't a good story. It's not a good thing to share with friends.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I think the combat is interesting. I think it's a beautifully designed game. I think you can definitely have fun with it. It's just not anything... It's not a revolutionary Metroidvania by any stretch of the imagination. It's just like a good one.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's 7.0. It's good. Your full review is up on IGN.com/TomMetroidvaniaMarks. That is that's not the URL. Please don't. I don't think that will lead you anywhere. But
I'm going to buy that URL before I hope publish. So. Yeah.
Your full review is up on IGN.com. People who are more interested can read or watch that. Another game that's coming out, we don't have a review just yet. There will be a review on IGN closer to launch, but Overcooked 2 is coming out. And we've all spent a bit of time with it. We've spent a bit of time with the original Overcooked. It was one of my favorite games of the year when it launched. And the first question I want to pose to all of you, since you've played a bit of it and know the series, does this feel to you like, from your play capacity, Overcooked 1.5, or does it feel like a true sequel? And is that a bad thing if it feels like just more Overcooked?
Yeah, it definitely, when I thought about, I played the heck out of Overcooked 1. I was one of the people, like most people, that you don't move on unless you get 3 stars.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I got 2.
Yeah.
Okay, then we're doing this again until we get 3. Well, because you want to get good at that level. You don't want to have to then, like, you're like, what were we doing in this level again? So, you know, played the heck out of Overcooked. And I thought to myself, what can they do to change this? And it was a scary thought because, like, to me, the game is just great how it is. And then after playing Overcooked 2 a ton, I'm just kind of like, yeah, it really is just like Overcooked 1.5. Like, it, not a lot changes, but enough changes. It could have been DLC. I guess. Like, mm-hmm. enough changes happen to make the game feel different, but they're changes that could exist in Overcooked 1. Like, obviously, the biggest change is the throw, and there are maps built around that.
So, yeah.
Like, actually, legitimately, like, in Overcooked 1, you could drop food. In this one, it's a legit mechanic to throw it across because you can't get across sometimes, and so that, like, that's really cool. The way the levels change, like, you're in a level and then the hot air balloon pops and now you're on the ground doing something else, like, that's really cool. I'm totally fine with it, though.
Yeah.
I love Overcooked too.
Some of the biggest changes are, as you mentioned, the throw, which you can actually arc in pretty much. You can throw, say, a piece of food and directly get it onto a chopping board to help your friend who's on the other side of the map.
Just like in real life.
Yes, exactly like in a real life
kitchen. But you
can't
throw plates because plates can break. But yeah. Eggs
exactly.
can't.
Don't be
rude. Yeah.
But...
The science of Overcooked 2. You can
It's not
also,
realistic enough. I don't like it.
Yeah, we're here to debate the realism of Overcooked. You also can emote during matches. So you can okay. taunt and mess around with your friends if they do something you're not happy with.
The first one, you can do the meow, 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 do the exclamation marks.
Yeah, yeah. There's a bit more to it now. And then, as mm-hmm. you were saying, there are more expansive levels, and the design of them is really interesting. So, Casey and Tom, how do you feel about the changes that you've seen?
I really love the throwing mechanic because it gives you the ability to do some really epic things that you wouldn't be able to do before. Like when we were playing earlier, we were on that raft level and I'm able to throw it across just as it's moving away so that if I had thrown it a second later, it wouldn't have landed, and then it landed straight in the frying pan, and that's awesome. Or like when we were playing that level with acid on the floor with the changing pathways, like I was going to get dipped in the acid. There's nothing I could do about it, but I threw the plate. Well, not the plate, but I threw the food to my friend so they could cook it while I died.
So, while I died. Save yourself.
But I saved the food. And Tom, same thing. You had a fully cooked cake.
Yeah.
You're running across trying to
Sounds like Tom.
Get that cake out to delivery, and you were going to get dipped in that acid, but you threw the cake and I caught it. And the day was saved. And I mean, that's awesome. It's a really fun game. I loved Overcooked 1. This is more of that with different things and more lively, interesting levels.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing that stood out to me is that the levels actually feel way, way better in this one. I reviewed Overcooked 1 twice, actually, because I reviewed it and then I reviewed the Digital Deluxe Edition or whatever
the
it was called.
Switch on the version. Switch version. Yeah. Yeah, that was your first review here, correct?
It was.
Yeah. Jonathan remembers. Never forget.
The levels.
It's written on his hand. It was your first review.
I agree with Mark that I think the levels themselves could have just been DLC, and that those aren't drastically different. They are, they are very different in cool ways, and they feel much better designed. The thing that I was more impressed by is the fact that there are a lot of little quality of life things, like the throw, like the arcade mode for setting up, so you don't
That's
always
really
have to,
nice.
Like, you don't have to always be on the world map to select levels when you just want to play multiplayer. There are a lot of little things like that that I think are just really, really smart additions.
Well, this game has online now, right?
Yes. That's the biggest
thing that Overcooked 1 was missing, because like I would want to play with like my wife or whatever, and she's like, I'm playing whatever, watching Will and Grace, and like
I'm not your wife.
And it's like
Will and Grace is great.
Yeah, game was not, I did not find it very enjoyable to play by myself.
So it's just not as good.
It's just not as fun.
Just flat.
And it's like I would love to be able to just do some of these levels by just jumping onto a, you know, the game doesn't take that much coordination.
Online,
the later levels do.
Online is like a real game changer, I think, for this because. Yeah, it's just not as good with one person or two people, and the ability to just play with friends who don't live in the same state as you, or my brother who lives up in Canada, you know, I can just play Overcooked with him now, which is just awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, it's nice to see these quality of life changes. I agree. From what I've played so far, it does feel like a good enhancement of the first game, but the first game was so fun that I'm not looking for some radical change to this franchise.
Yeah, the other thing with the whole 1.5 thing can often be misconstrued as just the same game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? And this definitely feels like an improvement in pretty much every way. I don't think that there is one part of Overcooked 2 that is probably at all even the same or worse than the first game. I think levels seem way better.
Isn't worse, you know, because that mechanic's there. If you don't want to use it, don't use it. But it's most people threw in the first game by just dropping stuff.
Throwing is a cool mechanic. Multiplayer online is a really cool mechanic. There's a lot of smart menu changes, and the levels just feel really, really like smarter than the last game. I think it's just going to make people who like the first game happy.
Yeah, as someone who loved that first game, it's very exciting. Also,
real quick, oh, what's the story?
Oh,
in this time?
Yeah. So, spoilers for Overcooked 2 follow. If you don't want to know the story setup, turn away now. The first game opened with an apocalypse.
Yeah.
And you have to go back in time.
And you went back
the ever peckish.
Yes. This one opens with the unbred. Yes. Zombie toast have risen from the graves.
It's a zombie game.
And they are hungry. Yes. Following in the footsteps of The Walking Dead, yet another zombie piece.
There
of
they
video.
Are.
The oh unbred. They're watching the video version.
There's those little zombie bread boys.
And they want food. They want a lot of food. So you have to go out into the world, learn new, you have to learn new cooks. I don't know what
oh
I'm saying.
Oh my God.
Learn new recipes.
Learn
I couldn't
cooks.
Think of the word.
Guys,
you
wow.
gotta do all the cooks.
I just broke for a second.
The bread has risen.
Yep. That's one of the puns in the
game. Oh no.
The walking bread.
Oh man.
This reminds me of that episode of Adventure Time when they're all stuck in the castle and.
It's the first episode, I think.
What?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
According to Hulu, it is the first episode. Maybe it airs differently. Oh. I watched that as the first episode of
the Rise
show.
Of the Unbred.
The only thing I love more than Battle Royales is Adventure Time.
Oh, this is a battle royale. Too.
Yeah,
that's it.
No!
Overcooked halfway through each level turns into a battle
royale.
100 pieces of unbred descend onto a kitchen, and you have to.
Oh, where are we dropping, boy?
So Overcooked 2 will be getting a full review of that on IGN.com closer to launch. I very much am looking forward to playing more Overcooked. Maybe we can play with some of the Beyond fans sometime.
I have it on my Switch here at work. But I want to play it on PS4. And I'm not just saying that because I'm on a PlayStation podcast.
Pandering!
I will say across the board, I played on Switch and PS4. The load times are so much better, and those were a huge problem to me in the first game. So
oh, yeah.
It is nice that it actually loads very quickly this time.
On the Switch?
On the Switch and PS4, yeah.
Awesome.
So it was nice to see that. Moving on. Time for some rapid fire. We've talked about all the games we can talk about right now, so we're going to answer your questions. Yes, you, if you're a member of the IGN Beyond Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/podcastbeyond. If you haven't joined, join that wonderful group of Podcast Beyond listeners because they know what's up.
Ooh.
So we're going to answer some of the questions. Chris Woodside asks, how do you feel about the growing trend where games are more spread out with major releases coming in the first half of the year rather than all together in October and November? Now, Tom, I know you feel a certain way about this.
Yeah, I think this is not the case, basically. I think this is, so how do I put this? They are more spread out because there are more.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is I think you're right to say that there are more major releases throughout the year, but also October and November are still nuts every single year.
Like, I'm already crying internally.
Yeah. You guys have a whiteboard up in the wikis area that's like all the games that we're going to have to do stuff for.
And then a sad face.
Yeah, every morning my team just looks at that and just cries and pats each other on the back.
I can't believe like we're almost there. And so like I was in an email thread and I got the like, hey, what do you guys plan on working on this fall? So that way we can start pre-assigning things. And so it's like Spider-Man, Tomb Raider, and I'm just putting my name next to stuff. And I'm like, these come out within a week of each other.
Yeah. So I think that you're right to say that it is spread out, but it's really just that there's a lot of stuff coming out at any given time. And it's nuts. I think it's awesome that there's so many good games. It also is way hard to keep up with now.
Oh, yeah.
But it's really cool that we don't, you know, the summer used to always be this doldrums period for games, and that's not the case anymore. It's just there's always something cool to find and always something cool
to
play.
I think right now is our biggest, like, lull.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we're busy because we got E3 and Comic-Con and stuff like that, but, like, these couple of months have been kind of slower. Like, yeah, you know, you got Chasm and Overcooked, but, like, the next big game probably isn't, until Spider-Man.
Hunter World PC and Monster Hunter Generations Ultimate
for
Switch.
She had to do it.
And
that's in October.
No. That's
soon?
August.
Oh.
Yeah. Both are Guacamelee August. 2 is also coming out soon, which I'm excited for.
Yeah, there's a lot of the Metroidvania genres taking over August, basically, which I'm cool with.
Banner Saga 3 just came out.
Yeah.
Divinity Original Sin 2 is also coming out for consoles at the end of the month.
But
it's a quiet time outside of October and November. We really have nothing to do these days. I sleep
there's
at my desk
to play.
Most of the time.
I love it. I love that there's just this like huge amount of games. You can kind of take your pick on what you want to play. And then December, like this December is kind of crazy. because it's got
Smash.
It will just cost four. Casey, come on now.
Sorry.
And I we don't talk about Smash.
So this December is a little nuts because of Smash, but it's like there's a little bit of a lull, and then February is just like looks insane.
And the end of January when Kingdom Hearts 3 comes out. Let me tell you about a little boy named Sora. I have 10 more hours of this. Anyway, thank you, Chris, for your question. Yair Donan asks, what's your dream sequel that will probably never get made? Mine is a toss-up between a sequel to Dante's Inferno and one for Ninja Theory's DMC reboot. The mine there was Yair, not me. For me personally, I want a sequel to, I believe it was 2008, the Prince of Persia soft reboot. That was all art. It was very artsy, and the style of it was incredible. It was never really a difficult game, but it was such a satisfying parkour loop that I loved so much that I would love another of those.
When you say so, sequel, can it be a sequel to a part two of something?
Sure, a prequel.
Then Portal 3, like that's just like, you know. Of course, like you can name anything that Valve makes, but yeah, like if there's any franchise that I don't think I'll ever see again, but would love to see another one, it is Portal 3.
I think there's a chance.
I
think there's hope.
That's why I'm still.
They just came out with a mobile game, like this.
Yeah, the Bridge Constructor.
Yeah,
they also which is using their license, but it's like, you know,
they also not out with a Portal related experience for the new VR controllers that they have.
Yeah, when I was playing a Zen Pinball Portal pinball game, I was like, I just want Portal.
I think there's a chance it won't be called Portal 3, but that we will get another Portal. Shooting puzzles.
It'll be called Half-Life 3.
If they're the same game, that would be fine with me. I'm going to move on to Johnny Mohammed.
No, wait. Am I?
God, I'm sorry. Into Portal, and I was just so excited by
Portal,
it. I'm sorry.
Guys, Portal was the right answer.
I'm going to
just move
out.
On.
I want another Drakengard. That's the wrong answer. But I want another Drakengard by Yoko Taro.
Yeah.
Drakengard 2 is not canon. We need a real Drakengard 2 with Yoko Taro working on it, because Drakengard 2 did not have Yoko Taro on it.
Casey's new podcast, Drakengard 2, is not canon. A 52-part series in which she goes into the non-canonization of that game. Tom, what about you?
Fez 2. Mm. Fez 2 was going to be made and then got canceled and will never come back, and Fez is probably in my top 5 games ever, so Fez 2 for sure for me.
I also want to clarify, I understand Drakengard 3 exists. I just want another Drakengard anyway.
Yours should have just been Kingdom Hearts 3.
Yeah.
I mean, that's never...
And now that it's happening, it's happening.
We'll see. When that game is in my hand, when I'll believe that that's happening.
That game is in my heart, and that is all that matters. Kingdom Hearts coming to January 2019.
We'll see.
Moving on. I believe it in my soul. Speaking of... Because I know we have some people on the show who have also played it. Johnny Mohammed asks, if you could add any world you would want into Kingdom Hearts, regardless of the IP ownership, what would it be?
Oh, easy.
Yeah, Mark, go ahead.
Mean Girls. They would go to the Mean Girls universe, and they would try to get in Regina George's clique.
Oh, that is such a good idea.
It's so good.
That is such a strong pitch.
You only wear pink.
Regardless of IP ownership is a good part.
Doesn't have to be Disney.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously not.
Actually,
Mean Girls.
In the Disney canon, I would actually pick the Muppets.
Ooh.
I think the Muppets and Sora, Donald, Goofy would be just felt people walking around.
Oh.
But it would actually take place in the real world. It would be an FMV level. So it's them, but it's always shot from like waist up. So it's just like Sora bopping around and being like,
yeah,
I'm Sora. I got to collect things. And then it's a fun time with the gang.
Sounds good.
Barrett Courtney, our producer, has put up a photo of King of the Hill on one of our screens.
That is the franchise. So
I'm going to assume Barrett really wants King of the Hill.
I don't think any of those characters are over 21, so they couldn't just stand around and drink beer all day, so it's not realistic.
True. No, Donald is 57.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
so well, is that canon?
Sora
is good.
It is now.
And Kyrie and Riku aren't. So.
Yeah. I was actually going to go similar. I was thinking The Simpsons might be fun. As long as they got all the real voice actors, The Simpsons would actually be a pretty amusing one. But my real answer is probably just Star Wars, which is a thing that can happen now that Disney owns it.
Yeah. Lightsaber Keyblades.
Yeah. Just say Monster Hunter.
Don't say,
yeah,
don't
we
say
know.
Fortnite.
Yeah. I was going to say Bloodborne because I thought...
Oh,
Bloodborne.
Oh, well, Jesus. That would be awesome. I'd be
got real dark.
I'd want it to be like a 5-minute level where they all appear in the world and then they just see people getting like ripped apart and these gross monsters.
And they
then
just
they,
nope out of
yeah,
there.
Yeah, they just walk right back out the
like,
door.
It's, nah.
Yeah, it's the Abe Simpson gif. They just put Jeez. Back on their Keyblade hats and then walk out.
Yeah.
Bloodborne. That's great.
That would be a real interesting
do you,
time.
Do you think that Sora wears a Keyblade hat? Is that...
I'd like to imagine he does.
What is a Keyblade hat?
Anyway, moving on to our final question. Stephen Lau asks, do you ever instinctively yell out Beyond whenever someone says that word, even if you're not recording an episode? Mm. And I want to ask this not just for Beyond, but do you have any weird vocal tics like that? Mm-hmm. I do yell out Beyond when people say the word Beyond. Happens a lot in morning meetings here at IGN. I also do when someone says, it's been a while. I will sing the bit of It's Been a While by Stained.
Been a while.
Yeah, I do that.
Copyright tracks.
It's a tick from a show called You Talking You Two to Me, if anyone listens to that.
You Talking You Two to Yeah.
Yeah, which is a YouTube podcast.
Yeah, Scott Aukerman.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And Adam Scott. Scott and Scott. Anyway, does anyone else have a vocal tick like that? I'm curious.
Every time somebody says one time and then pauses, I'll just say, I saw a ghost in my head, because that's a thing that my friend used to say all the time. Was one time I saw a ghost, and so I never knew where it came from. When he graduated college, they like were reading his name, and they were like, da 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 da. One time I saw a ghost was like his quote to be read as he was walking across the stage.
Great.
Anytime somebody goes one time, I'll just be like, I saw a ghost, and I don't know why.
I don't think so. I mean, like, so as the most veteran member of this panel for Podcast Beyond, one and a half episodes. I've been watching Beyond since like 200, though. So yeah, like this whole like it was like a thing you see Greg Miller do. Like they'd be like, yeah, I like this game, and beyond that, and then beyond, you know. And so it's like it's kind of like you hear it sometimes. But I think I just hear Greg's voice doing it. I don't do it. And no, I don't think I have anything like that. Okay. No.
I also don't do it because I think this is only my third episode.
That's fair. That's what I want to know in general about
Well,
that.
So I'll say it in my head every time. When somebody else says Beyond, my brain will scream
right,
it.
That's what I'm saying.
Well,
I
imagine Jonathan doing it.
Yeah, yeah. It happened to me in my interview for IGN.
Oh no.
I was being interviewed, and it was basically everyone on the editorial team was all around a conference table interviewing me all at once. And as I was just talking about something, answering a question, I said beyond that, and Pear just went beyond, and I was like, oh, that.
And then he was like, you're hired. And you were like, nice.
That was the secret word.
Yeah, I guess so.
You had to just drop all the podcast names.
It's like Pee Wee's Playhouse.
I sure have.
We all go crazy.
Yeah. Anytime someone says Beyond in the office, everyone at IGN goes, ah!
Yeah.
Freaks
it's
out.
It's the secret word every day.
Word of the day.
It's rough around these parts when the word Beyond is said.
All right.
Speaking of Beyond.
Beyond?
There we go. That is the end of IGN Beyond episode 553. Casey, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter at ShinyKCD.
And Mark, where can people find us?
At Mark _ Medina, or in the world of No Man's Sky. What a game.
Tom, what about you?
At Tom R. Marks, or lost in some subterranean Metroidvania-like cave, probably.
Oh, classic no. Tom. And I am at JM Dornbush on Twitter. You can find me there talking about Kingdom Hearts. Surprise, surprise. Thank you all so much for joining me on this episode. A reminder, if you're watching, Beyond is now live Wednesdays at 3 p.m. at beyond.ign.com. You can find the show on all other platforms 24 hours later, so be sure to come to beyond.ign.com. And with that, Beyond.
Beyond.
Beyonce.
Beyond.
Beyond.
You did it. You did it.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world. That ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.